You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
You're listening to episode number 35 of Living the Dream with Rory O'Malley. If you like the podcast, remember to subscribe, rate, and review, and tell everyone you've ever met.
Audition, side job, swimming upstream. Believe it or not, you're living the dream.
Hello, dreamers. Rory O'Malley here, your host of Living the Dream. Thank you so much for listening. It is a very big day because today is opening night for Hamilton, an American musical in the city of Los Angeles, California. Hamilton officially opens today in La La Land, and I could not be more excited. The city of Los Angeles could not be more excited. Our cast could not be more excited. It is such an exciting day. We have Lin-Manuel Miranda coming to the show, and on top of everything, we are going to have a kick-ass party after. I've heard rumors that this party is going to be really incredible, and Hamilton knows how to throw a party, so it's really, really thrilling to get to go to one of those. What better way to celebrate the opening of Hamilton in Los Angeles than talking to Hamiltour's very own Jefferson Lafayette, Jordan Donica. Jordan is such a great guy. I have really enjoyed getting to know him. He is from Indiana. He's actually from Indianapolis, where my husband grew up, and went to the same high school that my husband went to, a few years apart. But he is just a great Midwest guy. And I really, really think that he is a wonderful leader in the cast, and he is as genuine and nice backstage as he is talented and phenomenal on stage. And that to me is the recipe for success in a career. And he's got a lot of talent, and you're going to be hearing a lot about Jordan Donica. So here's my conversation with the amazing Jordan Donica.
Hi, Jordan.
Hey.
Welcome to Living the Dream.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. This is amazing.
This is amazing, yeah. Isn't it?
I've listened to most of your episodes, so
I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that you were a listener.
Yeah, I've been a huge fan of yours for a long time. So,
oh, Jordan, stop now. We have not a similar background, but kind of just in the Midwest sense, and we have a lot of crossover because you went to Roncalli High School in Indianapolis.
I sure did. Yeah,
and that is where my husband went to high school.
Yes.
So I started hearing about you when you were in Phantom and your teachers from Roncalli came to New York.
Yes.
And I got them tickets to Hamilton, and they were like, "We're also seeing Phantom. One of our students is in it." And I hadn't met you yet at that point.
No, I don't think we had met yet. Yeah.
But we finally met at what event was it?
I think it was the Broadway Flea Market.
Okay. So that was almost a year ago.
Almost a year ago, like in September, I think. I don't know exactly when that was, but because I think you were signing at this with Mandy Gonzalez at the same time.
Yes, yeah.
And we were in the same group.
That's right.
Like, we sat at that table at the theater, the music box. Yeah.
Right.
And I was like, hey, I know I'm like, yeah, but your husband went to my high school. Just wanted to introduce myself, and
But I had heard all about you. I had never met you, so I was like, "Oh my god!" And then we took a picture.
Yeah,
and I'm sure that got spread around Indianapolis.
Oh yeah,
hit the news.
They're great over there. I'm sure it hit the news, and I have no idea. I probably never even knew about it.
Well, it certainly hit the Roncalli newsletters.
Yeah,
because then when all of a sudden, fast forward to opening night in San Francisco, you got a video of Roncalli High School giving you a welcome video that was Guns and Chips.
Yeah.
The show choir there.
The show choir, yeah.
Right? And they put together this whole choreographed...
Oh my gosh, it was crazy. I was not expecting that at all.
I mean, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, Joy Newton, he's great. Who you met. He's
yes,
one of the teachers that you met, and they included you in that video as well. And
it was
just like, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it
not
was...
Not in my wildest dreams that I... imagine that would happen.
Yeah, well, that they would be so supportive of you, and they at the end when they said happy opening Jordan and Rory.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, well, my high school didn't put together a video for me. So
yeah, listen, come on, Cleveland.
I've never even been to Roncalli High School, and yet I feel like I'm a part of it.
They embrace you as though you are a part of
they definitely do, yeah. And I appreciate it. And
it's a great place.
And I know a lot of people who graduated from there, and they're good people, good folks,
fantastic.
But you know, also just like we're from the Midwest,
we
and
are.
I think that does mean that's a very specific thing, a specific way of growing up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I went to school in Ohio as well.
Oh, right,
Otterbein. So
Otterbein.
I went to college. Excuse me.
Right,
and so I went to school with a lot of people from Cleveland, and one of my roommates was from Toledo. So I spent a lot of time in Northern Ohio as well. And
So let's go back though to Roncalli. Were you already, when you got to high school, involved in the arts?
Yeah, I had been involved in the arts since I was, technically since I was about 3 or 4.
Right.
But I started doing shows on stage, like at theaters, when I was 8. So I'd already been involved in the arts and involved in sports.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why I remember. I remember you telling me this story that when you were deciding on high school, you were trying to figure out what high school would let you do both sports and the arts.
Yeah. And it was really the only, I had a stipulation. Of course, I could go to the public school, which was Lawrence Central, which had a great football program and a great arts program, but the two never really crossed paths. And then, or I could go to a private school. I'd gone to Catholic school for a couple years prior to that, and my mom had the stipulation, as long as I kept good grades and did my job as a student, then I could go to Catholic high school.
As long as you kept up your end of the bargain grades and keep them going,
because
it's a lot of money.
Yeah. So it happened that Roncalli was one of the most affordable private schools in Indianapolis. They also were really good about if you couldn't pay right away, like payment plans and things like that. But aside from that, they never said you couldn't do something. I went to other open houses where it was just that'd be kind of hard to
swing both.
Yeah, but Roncalli was like, we'll make it work. We've never really had crossover like that before. But
we don't have a lot of musical theater enthusiasts who want to be on the football team.
Yes,
is that what you're saying?
Yeah, basically. But that, another reason that I chose to go there was because of the history of football that Roncalli has. And my grandfather was a football coach and athletic director down at Bloomington North High School in Bloomington, which is where my family is from and grew up. So I kind of wanted to follow in those footsteps, knowing that I wanted as a career to do theater.
Your family is from Bloomington,
Indiana,
and you didn't go to IU.
No, I did not.
That was there like any was not. Was there any consideration?
No. Not
at all. Wow.
No.
Really?
There was no I when I got into high school, I knew that I wanted to go to college out of state. Because I also lived in Tennessee for 8 years, I knew that I wanted to kind of get out of Indiana. My grandma still lives down there, and my papa, and I have other family down there as well. If I wanted to play basketball, if I wanted to get my master's degree, then I probably would have gone there, but I wanted to get out of Indiana.
Yeah.
I wanted to see
do
other
do something
parts.
Different.
Yeah.
So
and
went
so I went
all
to
the
Ohio.
Way to Ohio.
Oh so God. I went 3 hours... 3 hours east.
Small steps, baby steps.
And actually, I ended up there by accident, really.
Tell me the story.
I was actually in Ashland, Ohio, visiting for a football recruiting trip. And
what position did you play in?
I was a wide receiver.
Wow.
Yeah, being 6'4", 6'5".
Yeah.
About 200 pounds. So,
oh, my God. I was the center.
Really?
I played football.
Hey.
All-time center.
Listen, that's a great... That's the smartest person on the field has to be.
Well, okay.
Really?
I mean, I had to know the calls, and I had to... The center is the guy who hikes the ball under his legs to the quarterback.
Yeah.
So I think the quarterback has to be pretty smart.
Well, yes, the quarterback has to be smart, but as the levels go, of course the quarterback has to be smart, but the center has to be able to do everything that the quarterback does without necessarily, they have to be able to communicate without really.
But backwards and in heels.
Backwards and in spikes and yes. with someone's hands under your crotch.
Yeah.
And
I didn't mind that. Yeah. I really enjoyed the camaraderie and the team effort of football. I'm so glad that I had that, but it is really intense. And actually, like, I remember going to children's theater classes mm-hmm. and teen theater mm-hmm. and covered in mud because I was at mm-hmm. football practice.
Well, yeah, that's why I loved Roncalli so much, because I could, I didn't do the fall play, but I was always like, I always helped with the tech side of it. So right. I helped build the sets and was on the crew and all of that. So, you know, I'd be in football at football practice or show choir practice after football practice. So I'd be at football practice from 3:30 to 7.
Right.
And then change and walk over to tech or walk over to show choir and right. have a rehearsal and be there until 10 and then drive home.
Right.
And I lived 45 minutes north of I lived on the north side. So
right.
But it never was a burden. I loved my time there. It was very fulfilling and very satisfying. And I was going to continue playing football through college and see where it took me, because I was able to become better at it. It was something right. that didn't necessarily come natural uh-huh. for me, and it helped teach me how to better myself in theater as well. And it gave me a better work ethic. But then I hurt myself in a basketball game my junior year, and as I was visiting Ashland my senior year, it became clearer to me that my injury would probably keep me from playing football. Yeah. I could probably continue, but I would not really be able to walk or dance anymore if I did. So when I was driving back from Ashland with my Aunt Kathy, my Aunt Kim, who lives in Columbus, called. Like, literally, we were driving back, and she was like, "Hey, like, have you considered Otterbein?" And I was like, I've never heard of that place. And I think this was my junior year. Yeah, this was my junior year, the end of my junior year, going into my senior year. And I was like, I don't really want to stop. I really just want to go home and veg.
Right.
Because we had spent 2 days in northern Ohio. And so so we called Otterbein on the way down. It's about a 3-hour drive. And they were like, "Yeah, please stop by." And so we stopped. And we went in the next day. Like, we were able to set up an appointment that quickly. And I thought we were just meeting with the dean of, or the head of the theater department, and that was that. And we get there, and it's raining, and I'm like, "Oh my gosh, I don't want to be here at all." And we met with the head of the department, Dr. John Stefano. We talked with him for like an hour, and then I had a tour, and then it was like a full day. It turned into a tour, lunch, and then I sat in on an acting class. And it was the most, I learned way more in that 3 hours of an acting class that I could put to words of things. I was like, "Oh, like, I do that. Oh, that's how you explain that. Like, right. Oh my gosh, like, that's something I've never seen before, but I've always wondered how one executes something like that."
Right.
And it was a Shakespeare class. And from that moment on, I was like, okay, if I don't get into this program, no matter if I get into other programs, I will probably go play football somewhere and get a BA in theater and then mm-hmm. see where life takes me. But luckily I got in, and here we are.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
So you weren't making this huge search for all the different theater schools.
No.
It kind of found you.
Yeah. I mean, I had my freshman year of high school, I was really keen on going to Millikan in Illinois.
Uh-huh.
And I visited there a few times, and that was kind of going to be the place that I was going to go. And then I brought in my search to... Then when I took my sophomore year of high school off from the college search, and then when I got better at football, I was like, that opened up a lot of bigger colleges. I was thinking maybe Northwestern, maybe Boise State.
Right.
To play football and get a BA or something. And then I got injured, and I just kind of was like, I don't know. Cause I never really had an interest in going to Michigan or Cincinnati or Carnegie Mellon.
Yeah.
Not because those are all great programs, but I like, I went to a smaller high school, I went to a smaller middle school. I kind of, I shut down in large crowds of people, so I wanted to be able to really have a close student-teacher connection.
Sure.
If I was going to pursue theater as a BFA.
Yeah.
And then Otterbein, kind of, my aunt, like I said, my aunt Kim, who lives in Columbus, called and was like, you should check this place out. And so I Googled it, and we called. I wasn't necessarily keen, and then I sat in on that acting class, and it changed my world.
Wow.
It changed. I was like, if I do get a BFA, it has to be from this place. And if I get in, which I did, I got in. I only auditioned at three schools, and I got into all three. But had I not gotten into Otterbein, I probably wouldn't have gone to the other two.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Just that's how strongly I felt about Otterbein's program. I was just like, this is for me. This is what I need.
Wow. So then you go and you're there for 4 years was it an intense program or
very intense. Wow. It's a conservatory program within a liberal arts university. Uh-huh. So you're in theater classes all day, every day, except you take one non-theater class.
Uh-huh.
It all culminates in the second half of your senior year, as a performance major. Every BFA major does this, but as a performance major, it happens in the second half of your senior year. You go on an internship, and you can go to New York, you can go to Chicago, you can go wherever you want, really. And Otterbein has a lot of connections that a lot of people don't really know about because it's such a small university. But most people end up at all the major casting offices in New York. There are people at Telsey, Tara Rubin, Jay Bender, Carnahan,
from that program. Michael it's Cassera. Like a little,
sometimes
they call Carnegie Mellon a mafia. They have like a little undercover mafia of Otterbein.
Yeah. Yeah. We call it like the neighborhood, like the Otterbein neighborhood.
The neighborhood. Oh, that's so much more Ohio and friendly.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's better than mafia.
Yeah. Because Otterbein's called like the quiet, peaceful village. So, and most people who live in New York from Otterbein live in the Upper West Side and up. So
really, they even have like, up the place that they
live? Oh, yeah. Like, where I lived in Washington Heights, I had friends that all of my friends and even people that I was friends with who had graduated before me lived within a 2-block radius of me.
Right.
And so it was just like...
Right.
It's great, yeah.
Well, one of the best parts of going to a school and making that move to New York City is that you're with your group of people.
Exactly.
You know, that you're able to make that transition with other people who it's just as scary to, and that you can support each other in your fear.
Yeah.
But we're not talking about something that happened like 10 years ago. This was what, yesterday? Yeah. You moved to New York? Like, I have to admit, like, I have been kind of talking to people in the order of how much time they've had outside of school and in the world, because I've been trying to wrap my head around what your experience and people who were literally left college to come work on this show. Everyone is so much younger than I am. And don't shake your head say that's not true.
No, age is just a number.
So. I mean, look, I know that, you know, at 36, it sounds like it's so old to so many people into this company. And in truth, like, I'm proud of the fact that what it sounds like to everybody is that I've had a lot of experience in the business.
Yeah.
And that's great, and I can't believe that that's true. I'm glad I'm still kicking, still around. Still around,
yeah. You've got a long, like, listen.
But no, it's been something that I'm, how do I approach conversations with people about the business who have just started?
Yeah.
And you have accomplished so much that a lot of people who just came into the show and this is their first big thing.
Yeah.
But you have already been on Broadway. You've already worked in a regional theater. Mm-hmm. Talk to me just about what your experience was when you left college.
Yeah. And so something that I was always growing up until high school, really, I was always kind of like, I was always the kid who would audition for everything in the community, uh-huh. even if I wasn't right for it, just because I wanted to be a part of right. that show. And 9 times out of 10, I wouldn't get that job, but the director would always be like, but do you want to like work as a stage manager, as a props person, as a costume person? I was like, yes, because I want to learn. I want to watch how this all works.
Right.
And then by the time I got to high school, I said, I made the goal of myself of knowing where I wanted to go to college. It's kind of like 4-year goals. When I got to Otterbein, I told myself I wanted to put myself into a position to be in Phantom of the Opera as quickly as possible.
Wait, that specific?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Ever since I was little, really, because I saw Phantom when I was 9.
Yeah.
And that was when because I'd started doing theater, and I was always the kid who was like, oh, I could do that for the Welch's Grape Juice kids, or the Oscar Mayer Wieners kids.
Sure.
I was like, I could do that. Like, why don't I do that? Like,
Oscar totally, Mayer, Phantom.
Yeah, OSCA. Yeah, yeah. BOLOGNA. Listen, like, wow. I could have done that so well, you know?
There's still time. Listen, you're young enough.
And I was always like, and I remember asking my mom once why I wasn't a Gerber baby. And I was just like, why wasn't I a Gerber baby? Like, am I not, you know? And so then when I saw Phantom for the first time, it was touring through Indianapolis and I was 9. I was with my cousin. And the dressing room scene happened and the Phantom's booming voice came on. And I said, I want to do that.
Wow.
I want to do that. And then I started taking voice lessons when I was 12. And I was classically trained in art songs and opera. And then Otterbein's a very strong acting and dancing program, as well as vocal training program. And so I chose to go there. And everything happens for a reason, because my freshman year, we had a freshman showcase. And I met this our provost at the time. Her name is Victoria McGillan. Uh-huh. And she came up to me afterwards and she was like, you remind me of my cousin. And I've had people say before, like, oh, like, you remind me of such and yeah. such. And I was like, oh, thank you very much. That's so nice of you. She was like, yeah, my cousin's Howard McGillan. And I was like, I had a minor heart attack, because yeah. Howard McGillan, for some people who don't know, is the longest running Phantom in Broadway history.
Right.
He's 6'4". We're the same height.
Wow.
Apparently, we sound very similar.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of the, he and Brian Stokes Mitchell were two artists that I looked to growing up to be like, oh, like, if you are tall, you can succeed, because I had this stigma about being tall.
Huh.
And so his cousin worked at my university, and I was like, oh, wow, that's crazy. And so she put us in contact, and we would talk, and he would give me advice, and I just trained. And then I went out to Utah Shakespeare Festival.
Once you got out of school, or during?
This was the summer of 2015.
Still in college.
So yeah, this was between my this was the summer in between my junior and senior year of college. Because I said, after my freshman year, I said, if I'm not in school, I want to be working in theater. I want to be making a living in theater.
Right.
I took away the safety net of I'll just go home and get a job and like save up for New York. I was like, if I make money, I'll save it for New York from mm-hmm. theater. So I had worked the winter prior in Jesus Christ Superstar at a regional theater in between the two semesters. And then I had worked the summer before at Otterbein Summer Theater. And now I got the opportunity to go to Utah. And that was one of the best experiences of my life.
Yeah.
And that's where I met my agents. And I auditioned for them. And then I did a couple freelance auditions my senior year before moving to New York. It was the fall. It was fall of 2015. And I auditioned.
So before you finished your senior year, you had agents that you were working with.
Yeah.
And were you worried about that at all? I mean, that's great. Yeah. And I would say, if anybody, you know, like, go for it.
Yeah.
Work with anybody who wants to work with you. And, yeah. you know, as long as they're legit, you know, yeah. it's great. But some people might be like, wait, I want to, you know, play the field a little bit yeah. when I get out there. But you were like, these people want to work with me. Let's do it.
Yeah, it was because I had worked with someone, Aaron Galligan Stierl in Utah, and he had done Phantom, and he had done a few other Broadway shows.
I know him.
Yeah.
He's married
to Shannon. What's her last name? I forget her last name. But
that's okay.
Shannon Andrews, I think, is her maiden name. But
okay.
But yeah.
Yeah, we did Lost Colony.
Hey.
He's in great. North Carolina. Yeah.
Yeah. So he was at Utah, and that's why that agency came out.
I see.
And so they had auditions, and so I knew...
They had auditions?
Yeah. So at Utah, there's a great program called REACH, it stands for Really Eager Artists Crying Hire. And so we raise money through various fundraising events. It's something that the festival supports, but it's completely run by the actors. And we reach out to various casting directors and agents.
Wow. And managers. It's like a showcase that the actors put.
Yes. And we pay for them to fly out. We pay for their flight. We put them up and we pay for them to see all of the 9 shows happening in rep. And then in return for them having an audition workshop. Yeah. So like Michael Cassara came out, Jay Bender came out, a ton of people came out, and the agents that I'm with were one of them.
Wow.
And I knew I had met them from there, and we really vibed well. It was Danny Prather who isn't there anymore. He has his own agency now, but he brought me into the office and I met the whole team.
Right.
And
how did you feel doing that? Like, you're still in school.
Yeah.
And you're not prepared, I mean, to go walk into an agency.
Yeah.
Nothing can really prepare you for that until you do it.
Exactly.
It's a very specific thing. How did you feel going into that room?
Nervous, but also, like, just excited.
Yeah.
At the possibility of meeting these agents. And then I walked in and saw everything that they've worked on, and I treated it like I treated going to these colleges.
Yeah.
You know, I had the same set of questions that I asked when I was interviewing at colleges. Because the thing I learned when you interview at, because I also had to interview for high school. And so what I learned is you always want to, even though you're being interviewed, you want to have as many questions as the interviewer has for you.
Sure.
So, I had a slew of questions for them. They had a slew of questions for me that I wasn't necessarily prepared for, but was honest about. And I told them what my goals are. And it was just that thing of like, okay, well, like, we're not going to sign you, but maybe we'll send you out for a couple auditions and see how that goes.
Right.
Like, and that's usually what happened. And I was like, okay, so cool. Because they were like, we're not really keen on signing you because you're still in school. And I was like, I totally understand. I told them I was moving there for internship at the end of December, and so they're like, we'll think about it more then if things go well. And then I was like, okay, and I just kind of forgot about it. And a couple weeks later, a different agency came to Otterbein to watch our showcase, and give us critiques and everything. And then a week after that, I got a call from both that person and the agents that I had met with from Utah,
right?
For the same exact audition, and it was for Les Mis, for Enjolras.
Sure,
and it was in like November or something. And I was like, "Well, I got to go with the people that I met first and have had meetings with." So I went with them, and I flew out to New York. I told my professors, and they were like, "Cool, like you'll just miss a day of classes, and we'll call it a day." So I flew out to New York. It was like a Friday audition. Mm-hmm. I auditioned. No, it was Monday. I auditioned and they were like, "Can you come back tomorrow?" And I was like, "Oh, sure." I was like, Yeah. And so I called my professors and I was like, "So I have a call back tomorrow." Like, they're like, "That's, don't worry about it."
Right.
And I went in, did the material again, and it went really well. And then I was on my way back to the airport, and the agency called me, and they were like, "We got your feedback. Like, unfortunately, it's not going to work out this time. But everyone loved you. Like, that's all we want. Whenever we when we're introducing people to you, is we just want good feedback."
And
so great job.
Yeah.
And then they called a month later, and they were like, "We want to sign you." So I was like, "Okay." And so I'd signed with them. I moved to New York the day after Christmas in 2015. Mm-hmm. Started my internship. I was a secretary, personal assistant for a woman named Jan Newcomb at New York Institute of Technology, in her master's program in theater leadership in the arts. So basically, if you wanted to start a theater program,
right,
or a new company.
Sure, a nonprofit theater company.
Yes, exactly. You could, these are the tools that you'd need.
So that's a, part of your school, and that was your second
half
of your senior year?
That was the second half of my senior year.
So it was like, and that was for the whole semester?
Whole
semester. So you were done with Otterbein, and you're out in New York?
Basically, yeah.
Wow.
And I technically had not graduated yet. I wasn't graduating until May. Uh-huh. And we still had Showcase still.
Right.
That I was going to do as well.
Right, but you already had an agent.
I already had an agent, so I was... I got called in to audition for Phantom for the tour for an ensemble role into understudy, and it was the same producer, Seth Scarhane, who I had met when I auditioned for Les Mis.
Right.
And so I went in, and it was just like one long day of auditions and callbacks, and I thought it went really well. And then a week later, my agent called, and he was like, this was like the end of January, and he was like, so it's not going to work out this time because they want you to play the role of Raoul, but it's not available.
Right.
So, and I was like, I would sweep the stage. I literally was like, I don't care. Like, I don't need to play.
Thinking back to seeing it in Indianapolis.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I was just like, I don't care if I'm the role or not. Like, I will be on the tech crew.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't matter. Like, I just to be a part of it would be really cool. But, and then I, you know, auditioned for, I had probably had like 3 or 4 auditions every week from then on out. I had booked a film thing, but then it fell through.
And while you're doing this internship during the day, so is the woman who has the internship, is she like, what's going on?
Yeah, so like that was part of why I chose to do that internship, because she was very supportive, and she was just like, listen, like, if you, whenever you need to go, just let me know. And then, so it would be the sort of thing where I would go in the morning, be there for a couple hours, go grab lunch, go to the audition, and then come back afterwards. So, like, I'd be gone for an hour or two and then come back and finish out the day.
That's great.
And in that process, I learned so much about the business side of theater, which is something you don't really get in school.
No.
So I learned a lot about what kind of money goes into producing something.
Right.
The spreadsheets. I worked on a lot of spreadsheets and just like creating a budget for something. And that was something I never understood how to do. And I learned a lot in that way. And then I probably had like 40 to 50 auditions and callbacks from January to March. And
that's a lot.
Yeah, it was a lot. Like, if you include the callbacks with the auditions.
Yeah, that's insane amount.
Yeah, so it was that thing of, like, I would always make it to, like, the final callback, but I didn't know exactly how to then get the job. And so then... Yeah, so I was like,
Jordan, you don't know how to get the job. It was, like, 2 months of
I know. But in all honesty, too, I had saved up, and I'd given myself a bit of a net. So, like, I had 3 months to not have a job in New York City.
Uh-huh.
And to do the... Because the internship is unpaid.
Sure.
So I had 3 months of doing this internship, auditioning without having an income that I had saved up for, that my family was helping me out with.
Sure.
Before I had to then... Okay.
Figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my plan was to go back to Utah or, like, do summer stock somewhere else. Because I was like, I would rather do that than stay in New York and wait tables or be a bartender, which is totally valid. But it's just not for me. And so I actually booked a job at Music Theater of Wichita. And then I was called in, and then Utah Shakes called for me to come back that summer, and then I was called in to audition for Phantom again.
Okay.
But this time for the Broadway show.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, yeah.
There's a spot for Raoul.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, okay, yeah. And it was funny because I had just the week before gone to see the show. I'd gone to see the show with my girlfriend at the time, and it's my favorite show. And afterwards I was like, okay, like, I can't see this anymore because, like, it just, it makes me so emotional because I'd love that story so much. I was like, until I'm in it one day, whenever that day is, I can't see it anymore. And then I got a call the next week, and I went in and auditioned and went through that process. It's probably like a month-long process from start to end.
Right.
And in that time period, also Showcase happened, and it was great, and we celebrated as a class. And then I got a call like a week after Showcase about Phantom, and...
rest.
Yeah.
Well, kind of history. I mean, yeah, it's not, it's recent history.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, so that was year. that was just, yeah, that was May of 2016.
Right. So and just over a year ago.
Yeah.
So you were like graduating when you got
your first Broadway show. Technically, graduation was like May 15th or something.
Right.
And I found out like the week before.
Right.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, obviously it's exciting and it's fun. Mm-hmm. And when, the thing for me is that, you know, like I've talked about this many times, I didn't really work for the first few years, mm-hmm. especially not for money.
Yeah.
But I also look at that period of time as like, I'm grateful that I didn't have to be good mm-hmm. at that time. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm grateful that there wasn't any kind of pressure mm-hmm. professionally because yeah. I wasn't ready for it.
Yeah.
You are like I've seen you perform. I've seen who you are as a person, and I don't have any question about that mm-hmm. personally.
Yeah.
But what does that feel like to you? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Like to be a part of any Broadway show, mm-hmm. and we'll go into more of what Hamilton is specifically. But I think like you're stepping into a Broadway show that you love, which I love too. By the way, I did my fifth grade report on Phantom of the Opera. I can't really imagine what that would feel like at mm-hmm. that time. Can you kind of walk us through like going into rehearsals and
yeah, it was that thing of I literally felt sincerely, this sounds like so cliche, but sincerely when I stepped into the rehearsal room, and not just the rehearsal room, but like these auditions, like meeting David Caddick and Kristen Blodgett and David Lai and Seth again. Meeting all of these people, I was just thankful to have this opportunity. And then when I got the job and stepped into the rehearsal room with Ali for music that first day, I have never felt more prepared for something in my life.
Sure.
I was like, this is why I started voice lessons when I was 11, yeah. 12 years old. This is why I chose to go to Ottermine. You know, there were ups and downs through all of those moments, and I know I'm young, but that like this moment was why I prepared so much for this moment that I was so ready for it.
Right.
I was so, and because of that, I was able to have so much fun. I wasn't like racking my brain. Now, also, I was sweating. I was so excited that I was sweating, and I couldn't stop sweating, and I was so hot. When I got the call, my face. Like, I had to go on a walk because I was playing Xbox, and I just couldn't stop sweating because I was so hot with excitement.
Yeah.
And it was just exploratory. It was everything that I could have dreamed of it being, and then some.
Right.
And then, you know, meeting Hal and what hearing what he had to say and
Hal
why.
Prince.
Yeah, Hal Prince, sorry. Sorry.
That's all right. You know, first name basis, that's all good. Yeah, yeah, Hal Prince.
Meeting, you know, like, he...
The Prince of Broadway.
Literally, if without him, most of what we know as Broadway wouldn't be.
Absolutely.
And so just being in his presence and hearing the enthusiasm that he still carries for the show, I think that's one of the main reasons why the show is still alive and very well, because he has not stopped loving it. And nurturing it,
caring
for
it,
leaving room for expression of new artists for
right.
it, and you know, being Ali and I were the first two people of color to play these roles on Broadway, at
wow.
least. So it was to be Raoul and Christine, respectively. So like that was something that felt really good, and I was proud of.
Was it that you were the first two people of color to ever play it, or to play it?
No, at the to same ever time? Play to ever play Christine or Raoul on Broadway.
I think ever.
She's ever.
Oh my
she
God.
Was the first, as far as I know. She was the first Asian Christine,
right?
And I was the first Black Raoul.
Wow.
Yeah.
I knew there was something like that, but I didn't realize that it was just.
Yeah.
I thought maybe it was at the same time.
Or, yeah, it was. Wow. It was. And I'll be honest with you, like it was never a subject that was a big deal,
right?
Which I love too, because
yeah.
the only time it was ever brought up was how when we met the first time, he just patted me on the shoulder and he's like, "Hey, you look like Raul to me."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Thank you." Like, thank you. Like, yeah. That's all I needed, and that's all like really needed to be said. And Allie and I love her to death, and I've learned so much from her because she's a Broadway veteran as well.
Yeah,
she's
yeah.
done Les Mis and Fantastics mm-hmm. and King and I. And,
yeah. And so, I worked with her as well. She's wonderful.
She's amazing. And so I learned from her as well in that moment. It was just a huge learning experience. And funny enough, it's also where I met my manager, David Lai, mm-hmm. who, another story about Phantom, when I was younger, the first time I saw it in New York, I was sitting behind, first row behind the conductor, and I sneezed and I was mortified. I was probably like 13 years old, 14 years old, and I was just mortified. I was like,
that you sneezed during the show?
In the middle of the show, because, you know, the conductor's like right there and
sure.
he's doing his thing. And he didn't miss a beat, didn't stop conducting, just turned around and said, "God bless you."
He did?
Yes. And cut to my first day of rehearsal, and it's with this man.
No.
David Lai. And I didn't tell him that for a while because I didn't want to be like, "Oh, like,
yeah.
that makes me feel old." But I was just like, wow. I could not have dreamed that this would be right. happening.
Half of your job is just trying to not make us feel old, isn't it, Jordan?
Yeah. Well, see, and I also never brought up my age. I was very. I didn't want to. I didn't want that to be a thing. But Allie, always
sure.
Allie was always like, "Mr. Young went over here, blah blah blah." And,
yeah, yeah.
And everyone in the building once no one. It took like a month, but then once everyone knew how young I was, because I didn't want that to be like, you know.
Well, you look young, but you're also so tall. It's yeah. not like you're baby faced in one way, but not yeah. but not really.
Yeah. So I didn't want that to be a
you're
thing.
A wide receiver.
I'm a wide receiver. Listen, I run fast. I catch balls.
Yeah. But no, you don't want it to be a thing. But it's. I mean, it's an impressive thing, and it's an amazing thing, and mm-hmm. I think that, you know, as somebody who knew I was coming into a cast of, like, all really young people, mm-hmm. I had a fear of my own, like, oh, God, are these people, how professional is everyone going to be? Mm-hmm. Clearly, I knew everyone would be talented. You mm-hmm. find talented people, and it can be young, but if it's your first experience working on a show,
of course,
yeah. how do you know how to be a professional,
yeah.
and do you know how to do a long run, and
yeah.
and also do you know how wonderful it is to be a part of Hamilton,
mm-hmm.
do you know how wonderful it is to be in a Broadway show,
yeah.
and there's without a doubt total gratitude and total professionalism within yeah. this company from everyone,
yeah,
more than me. I'm the least professional.
Oh, please.
I am. I feel like it's taken months for people to screw around with me backstage. I have been like from the get-go because I was in, you know, a year
yeah.
or so in yeah, already.
Because you were in it when we met.
Yeah, like yeah. I had already been doing the show for over a year by the time we get to San Francisco. And everyone's at their places like 5 minutes before yeah. their entrance, you know, and being yeah. very quiet and focused on what's happening on stage. And I'm like, hey, I used to have buddies in this show, yeah. you know, backstage.
Just chilling in your underwear. Yeah.
yeah. But now, you know, hey, everyone's a little more relaxed.
Yeah.
Everyone's Absolutely. Very professional at all times. But
it's...
I was so impressed with the professionalism
yeah.
and the gratitude and the excitement
yeah.
and the energy. And I think that you are a leader of that within the group of people who are just starting their careers.
Well, I very much appreciate that. It's something that I was shocked because I felt honest, in all honesty, and I've talked with my roommates about this, but very quickly I went from being the new guy at Phantom because I'd done Phantom and then I did a workshop of a show that's coming to Broadway next year. And that was like a pretty big thing, but I was also like, that was another situation where I'm a newbie, and
right.
this is a big secretive lab workshop thing. And then I had done a concert with Michael Feinstein that was very last minute, and so to me, I'm still really new at this. And then all of a sudden,
yeah.
we start Hamilton,
yeah.
and I find out like there are people who are even more new at this than I am.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I'm like, oh wow, like this is a different, this is a totally different
You're
experience
like
already.
Middle-aged around
yeah,
here,
but yeah, listen, I'm
comes at you quick.
Seasoned.
Look, you will you'll have this recording one day when you're 36 years old, my age, and you'll be like, how you feel right now about what 36 is. I swear to God, I was your age a second ago. And I like I had your kind of like perspective on the business mm-hmm. a second ago.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a very different experience right out of college, mm-hmm. but you know, that there's I don't want to call myself bitter or like worn down because I don't mm-hmm. think that I am, but I've certainly hit some brick walls. I've certainly hit, you know, had some harder times, and I've been able to have some great times and wonderful things.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm so grateful for something like Hamilton coming along now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that everyone in this group has shown that they appreciate it and have gratitude for it in a way that makes me so thrilled, and it's continued yeah. and will only continue, I know, as we get to Los Angeles and go to different cities.
Absolutely.
But that's something that I think comes from who you are as a person.
I appreciate that. It's
a skill.
It's that Midwest thing, you know?
Yeah.
It's because like I again, to me, I'm always like learning in a, not just like as an actor, but directing and producing is something that I want to do with my life as well.
Right.
And so to go from being in Phantom,
mm-hmm.
which is arguably the most popular show of all time.
Yeah.
It's in its 30th year now on Broadway. And now then, and to see how that works,
right.
to go into the hottest show of the century, of this century.
Yeah.
And to add its genesis, basically, it's only been around for 2 years, 3 years,
mm-hmm.
and to be in the first West Coast company of that, with all of these people, yourself included, that I've looked up to for so long.
So long, decades,
just so long. But like to be in this show with you guys is, and to see how you approach your work. Someone like Isaiah and Emmy and Michael and
right.
everybody approaches their work, and how the stage managers approach their work, and
yeah.
how the creative team approaches it, because this is something that will hopefully run for a long time.
Right.
And so to see at Phantom what it takes, with the ease of which it takes for them to run it over there,
yeah.
and then to be a part of something so new that's trying to figure out those things, it's been such a fascinating experience.
Yeah.
And to be like a small part of that has been,
well,
so
you are
incredible.
Someone who has clearly wanted to learn and experience everything, not just one thing.
Mm-mm, yeah.
And I think that's totally benefited you from being somebody who's like, I'm not going to give up my high school experience of football. I want to be a part of show choir
mm-hmm.
and be the wide receiver
mm-hmm.
and not settle for anything less.
Yeah.
To go to a school and say that you want to be a part of the music department and part of theater and say, I'm going to go do an internship and learn about the business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could have just gone to casting office or just tried to have more of, you know, connections as an actor,
mm-hmm.
but you decided to have more of an overall understanding of what the business was
mm-hmm.
and to be able to go to a, you know, Utah Shakespeare Festival and you know, have, you want to have a wide variety of experience
yeah.
in this industry, and you will. Clearly you're getting a lot right off the bat.
I will say it's something that I'm always constantly surprised and very thankful for. And I think that's part of what keeps me very humble and thankful is the amount of surprise that like not even I foresee a lot of things that happen. The only thing that I for sure was like I said with Phantom, like that was the only thing that I was like, yeah,
this
like,
will happen.
This is gonna happen.
Wow.
Since then, everything else, since I started working with my manager and with my agency combined, things have just kind of snowballed, and it's that thing
right.
of just hang on for the ride and always stay humble and stay kind. And
yeah.
don't forget where you come from.
Right.
Because that's the most important thing. And to share the love, because we all need it.
Yeah.
The world needs it. Because there have been times, I will say, like, where I think about, like, do I deserve to be here? Like, what am I doing to make the world a better place when there's so much turmoil happening everywhere, not just here? And then you go out the stage door and you meet these people who this show has changed their life, or something of that nature. And then I remember the 9-year-old kid who saw Phantom. That changed.
Right.
That put me in where I am right now.
Absolutely.
And who met Ted Neely back in the day, and how much that changed my life. And then I'm like, that's why I do what I do.
Yeah.
To give some little kid, one person, it doesn't have to be a little kid, but to give one person that life-changing experience.
Well, and specifically for you to be a part of this show. I mean, when you've talked to kids who come to the EduHam, mm-hmm. who they're one of their number one things is to say that their comments afterwards are, I can't believe that Thomas Jefferson looked like me.
Mm-hmm.
To have someone of color playing these parts,
mm-hmm.
and for you to have been playing Raoul,
mm-hmm.
and to have that, like, can you imagine if you were 9 and you saw a black man playing Raoul, you know, you would have been like, this is definitely for me, you know.
Yeah.
Even it is, you know, as even though you never had any doubt that you were going to be in that show,
mm-hmm.
and that's a testament to, like, who you are and who your family is, and, like, your dreams are coming true no matter what. It's you being that is breaking boundaries, and, you know, for kids who don't have that kind of support,
yeah,
whose dreams weren't as big as yours,
yeah,
they're becoming bigger because of you.
Yeah, that's I can't even speak, like, that. Yeah, that's amazing. That's the point of it all. I think that's and it doesn't necessarily matter if it's even theater,
mm-hmm.
whatever your dream is, like, just because you haven't. I always want to tell people, just because you haven't seen someone like you doing something that you want to do doesn't mean you can't do it.
Right.
So if you're the first, you're the first. And you're opening that door. You don't want to just open it. You want to tear it down. So anybody can.
Right.
Anybody can walk through that door.
Right. So I have one more question before we finish up here. You have... and I think everyone who's been listening to this would agree, you have a real calm and confident way about you, very peaceful. And when you go on that stage, you have to be Jefferson Lafayette, yeah. Which, by the way, my cousins who you met last night, remember they made you take one? I was mortified. My cousins came. They had never seen Hamilton or listened to it.
Wow, they never listened to it.
They never listened to it.
That's impressive.
They asked me before. These are my my cousins from Ohio who are a sophomore in high school and eighth grader. And they asked me before the show if I had a solo. And they were like, how will we know it's you when you come out? I was like, you'll know.
I mean, that's pretty clear.
Yeah.
Not only do you get solo, you get the whole thing.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, that's how little they knew of the show.
Yeah.
And afterwards, they were so obsessed with you and with Matheny and just, like, all the boys, of course. But you took pictures with them one by one.
Yes.
But they were enamored with your character, with Jefferson and Lafayette. And these are huge, huge, huge roles,
mm-hmm.
both of them.
Yeah.
And how were you able to fill those roles with the kind of bigness and energy and, you know?
So something that's always been kind of like my, and I know there's a lot of different schools of thought on this, especially depending on what medium you're in, TV and film, theater, dancing, whatever it is. My goal whenever I step on stage is to be me, but to, especially the biggest compliment I can get from someone is from someone who knows me, who's like, I totally just forgot that was you.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, we're acting, and yes, part of us is up there, like, it's a shade of Jordan, but I'm just this guy who really just wants to sit at home and play Xbox right. eat a hamburger, mm-hmm. and hang out with my friends and go to a movie by myself.
Right.
And it takes a lot of energy to step on stage. But then when you get on stage, you can be someone that you're, that a lot of times in the world tells you you're not allowed to be.
Right.
So a lot of what I do on stage is a culmination of people, versions of myself that I was at one point in time told I couldn't be. Hmm. But then when you step on stage, you can be that, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, you're brilliant.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just being a different shade of me, and that I've not been able to express. And so I think that's where a lot of that energy comes from.
Right.
And it literally reminds me of, it's playing. It's a play. It reminds me of playing. It's no different than playing Power Rangers as a little kid.
Right.
You know? And
that's great. I'd like to see some of those moves then. Power Rangers.
Listen, Power Rangers. I would also fight my one person lightsaber duels are the thing.
Oh.
Yes, I had. Wow. I had four lightsabers. You know, you fight yourself with a lightsaber.
With two? Like one in each hand or what?
Oh, no. Like you're one person for a while, then you set it down, and it's like basically filming a movie where you're fighting yourself.
One shot at a time.
Yes, one shot at a time.
Okay.
And I also used to play basketball against myself, too.
Wow.
I would create scenarios in my head.
That's how tall you are.
50 seconds to win the game. Like, can you do it?
You are 6'4"?
Yeah, 6'4¾".
And what about with your hair?
Oh my gosh, I don't even know.
We need to measure that.
Yeah, probably.
Because that really does make a huge difference. Because your hair has been growing since we started rehearsals, or since you found out you had the part?
Since we started rehearsals. Actually, technically since I found out I got the part.
Right.
Because I found out the day before Christmas, and I was still at Phantom. I was actually supposed to be at Phantom through April, but they were kind enough to allow me to leave.
That's very nice.
Yeah, they're amazing. Amazing.
That's great.
And so from that point on, I've been growing it out. I got it trimmed up a couple weeks ago just to shape it up and everything.
But it's kind of been the measure of how many shows we've done, knowing how big your hair was getting.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Your hair is amazing.
Thanks.
I lied. I have one more thing I want to talk about.
Yes.
Because it's unique. You are not on social media.
No.
You are a young American who has grown up surrounded by social media and is an actor.
Yeah.
You have chosen to not be on social media. Are you on any social media?
I have a Facebook. I have a personal Facebook page, and then I have a professional Facebook page.
Okay.
The only reason that I created a professional Facebook page was because to my agents and managers... suggestion.
Sure.
And I totally get it. I do. I also never post on it.
Right.
I should, but I just don't. And I didn't have a Facebook for about 3 years. And then my senior year of college, I got rid of my Facebook at the end of high school, basically, and my grandma got Facebook. And so
Grandma got Facebook,
and then I got rid of it. So then my main impetus for getting it back, and I created a whole new one, was so that people in my family could see what I was
right.
up to. But even then, I don't really post photos. I do occasionally,
mm-hmm.
but most of the things that I'm tagged in are things that other people have taken
sure.
or post to other people.
But no Twitter, no Instagram.
No, I don't do Twitter or Instagram. I tried Twitter once in high school, and I was like, this is awful.
So is it because you don't like doing it, or you don't believe in it? What are your thoughts about it? Or are they just not that deep and you just don't want...
I think it's a little bit of all of those things.
Sure.
I'm not very good at it, whatever that means. I also know that if I did do it, it would probably be time-consuming.
Sure.
And I would disconnect from the actual reality around me.
Right.
Which I already do sometimes when I get on Facebook anyways.
Yeah.
So I'm if I can't imagine having
with more different social media platforms,
I would miss so much that's happening around me. I think what it's, there are good things about it, but again, I know for myself too, it led to a lot. The reason I got rid of it was it led to a lot of false comfort.
Right.
I was like, oh, I have 3,000 friends on Facebook. But how many of these people do I actually are actually close with me in my life? And I was just and I was spending so much time on Facebook, and I was just this is bad. This is I'm making myself feel terrible because I'm not getting any sort of validation from a social media platform.
Yeah.
From people I don't even know.
Yeah.
So I just stay away from it. I think I try not to knock people who do it.
Right.
I remember someone, I like you ought to be in jeans. Sorry, Prince is playing in the background.
Yes, this is the time when they start testing the speakers. Yeah, so we know it's coming to the end.
Yeah, but a girl asked me at Phantom once why I don't have social media, and I said, because I'd rather sit out here and talk with you for 20 minutes in person than sit online and not know who you are.
Right.
And, you know, there's a lot of judgment that happens online, not just in terms of what we do, but in general, people feel more prone to have certain conversations online, but if you met them in person, they would be too afraid to actually speak on those conversations. So I'm like, if we want to talk politics, if we want to debate, I think real change happens when you have face-to-face conversations,
right,
or voice-to-voice conversations,
right,
because you're accountable for your words.
Yeah.
You actually have to say them and not type them.
Right.
So those are a few reasons why I don't have social media.
Well, they're all good ones, and I think it's a very mature decision.
Thanks.
I think you're a very mature young man.
Thank you. You too.
And you're also just a great guy, and I'm really glad to get to work with you.
I'm
young man.
Thank you, kind sir. I'm the blessed one.
Thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
Have a good show tonight.
You too. I'll see you out there.
Audition, side job, swimming upstream. Believe it or not, you're living the dream.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah,
not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.